Let me introduce Fred Cannon, Pennsylvania State University. The title is In God Made of One Blood, Every Ethnos Nation, and Anthropon Humans. Fred?
Thank you, sir. So I'm Fred Cannon, and God made of one blood, in parentheses, every nation, ethnic group of humans. So these are words that we see in genetics. And then here's the issue that we want to talk about now, is that word blood in the earliest codices. So there's two versions of this that appear about half the time each way, of one blood, and in Greek that's es enos amatos, or in Latin ex uno sanguini, or in dam wahad would be the Arabic, as we'll talk about in a minute, or of one, and that's the Greek es enos. And nothing of early codices say of one man. Now that's pretty significant because of common blood is the phrase that Charles Darwin used to use to characterize close species similarities back when neither he nor anyone else knew of DNA genetics. Consanguinity is what geneticists now use to describe common kinship. And then genetics shows a very close blood relationship between all humans, and that's significant. So the early codices that use of one blood and manuscripts and church father letters, the earliest is Rainius from about 180 years AD. The Codex Bizet uses it, and these also use of one blood. The Armenian Bible of 411 AD uses one blood. The ones that use of one are Codex Vaticanus, Codex Sinaiticus, Codex Alexandrius, and those are about the 300-year time frame. And then the first one that said of one man or Adam is actually in Arabic, and it's 1342. And so in Arabic, Dam means blood, and that's also true in Hebrew, and then Adam means human or man. Okay, so, but the Mount Sinai Arabic Codex of 867 does not use that, and I looked at a bunch of Arabic Bibles that are from more recent, and none of them use of one man. They all use of one blood or of one, and I had some help on the Arabic there. And then there were several paraphrases that use something to the fact of one man. And then the New International in 1973 was the first mainland Bible to use from one man. The New American Standard at first used from one with a footnote. Some later manuscripts read one blood. The newer American Standard in 1995 said from one man, man italicized to indicate inferred. And then the English Standard Version of 2001 and updated 2016 says from one man. And then these are some other well-known Bibles. The Wycliffe used of one. The Tyndale King James used of one blood. The Byzantine Greek New Testament from one blood. The Message, starting from scratch is what they say. And then the Catholic says from one. Okay, so here's the overview perspective. Of one or of one blood is the faithful translation of the earliest codices and church fathers' letters. Of one man is an emendation that dramatically alters and narrows the meaning of the text. If a translator is dissatisfied with using just the pronoun one, because it makes a clumsy sentence, so, and God made of one every nation, well, one every, what's that all about? Well, then the appropriate noun to use would be blood, because it's used in half of all the earliest codices of church fathers' letters. So one blood can mean one species. And here's what Immanuel Tov calls an emendation, a new readings that are not transmitted in the witnesses of the biblical text. There are far too many emendations that have been suggested by him, and he's a leading authority on the Dead Sea Scrolls. And then here's what Maddie Freeman says. The language of the Bible had to be clear, standardized. The text tells many truths, those on the surface and those hidden beneath it. The information must be preserved, even if it is beyond our understanding. We may lose knowledge that God wants us to have, even if we don't know why. Okay, so what we submit is that the truth has been hidden beneath the surface of the text until the most recent 2 centuries. And actually, a whole lot of this focus has been in the most recent 1 to 2 decades, and I'm going to be presenting things that are in the last 1 or 2 years. So science is actually unearthing the hidden meaning of this very important verse. So was Adam the first human to exist? Well, some people would go to this verse, 1 Corinthians 15. The first man, Adam, became a living soul. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. The first man was out of the earth, earthy. The second man was the Lord out of heaven. Okay, so was Jesus the second and last man? Well, all of us in this room are living proof that he was not the last man. So was Adam the first man? You don't have to infer that from this text because it's not talking about, first and last of all humans. Instead, Adam and Eve were the first humans recorded to have deliberately disobeyed a direct command from God. And then Jesus was the second or last who completely obeyed all the commandments of God. That's what that verse is really about. So just for fun, can you make a sentence with the same root word used 7 ways as all these parts of a sentence? Watch this. Bear the bear, bear, bearish, bear the bearish, bear, barely bears, bear, bear cubs. How about 17 ways? Bear the very bearish bear, barely bears, bear, bear cubs, when bearing towards the great bear constellations bearing, to bear down on the Bering Sea where the cold barrens freeze bear berries into ball bearings after bear bears the deaf beer of the bear market. Okay, so in Hebrew, B and R could also be V, so you could have all these different kind of words that could be there. Okay, how about if the word is the same in singular and plural? Deer, the deer, deer, from 2 deer parents of the deer species. Okay, how about Adam? So Adam is the same singular and plural. Adam, the Adam male, Adam human, from 2 Adam parents of the Adam species emerged from the Adama material world. That all makes sense. Okay, so what we submit is the Genesis 1 Adam is a Homo species human species, Homo sapiens, and the Genesis 2 Adam and Eve are 2 individuals who encountered God and survived a harsh climate by the mighty blessings of God. Okay, so Chris Stringer comes up with this kind of a diagram of all the different Homo genus species, and the commentary is as recently as 40,000 to 200,000 years ago, there were about 7 to 9, depending on how you count it, different species of Homo on planet Earth. But only one made it to now, and that's Homo sapiens. What happened? Why did that happen? That's the big anthropology question that we all ask. So as recently as 130,000, 120,000 years ago, we find archaeological sites that had been occupied by Homo, here Homo sapiens, here Homo neanderthalis. Here, this is probably Homo sapien. We don't know, actually, what this is. But this was at a time when everything was really good for human life and all other lives. So the Sahara and Arabia were all about savanna, about like eastern Colorado in their climate. And then by about 70,000 years ago, that became an archaeological desert, per Klein of Stanford, who's looked at this. The places that humans still could live is probably in the eastern mountains of Africa and South Africa and along the Mediterranean. And so here's what the climate did. 130,000 years ago was warmer, so higher on this plot is warmer, lower is colder, and lower is also more of a drought in Africa and Arabia. When Al Gore stood on a platform and pointed way up here, he was about here, and now we're all the way up here in the amount of CO2 we have, so red is CO2. And then by 110,000 years, there's a great drought, and that got accentuated by about 70,000 to 75,000 years ago. And then the sea level followed suit. So at about 70,000 years ago, 60, say, to 75,000, the mouth of the Red Sea was so low that you could walk across that mouth with about a 2.5 mile wide open water crossing. So God's bar creation through genetics and evolution, let's define some of the terms, and you guys know a lot of these terms, like a double helix. So cytosine matches with guanine, thymine matches with adenine. You can have mutations of cytosine going to thymine or adenine going to guanine or backwards. And humans have 3.2 billion base pairs, and the autosomal DNA is passed from both parents. Y chromosome from the males, the mitochondrial DNA passed by the females. On average, there's 1.25 to 1.5 times 10 to the minus 8 mutations per base pair per generation amongst our DNA. Okay, that means each of you in this room have 20 base pair mutations that neither your mom nor your dad had. Okay, that's the same rate amongst contemporaries in Iceland, Salt Lake City. A lot of those were Mormons. Comparing parents to their children. That's the same rate from a 45,000-year-old Homo sapiens Siberian to now. It's the same rate roughly as appears amongst all mammals through all time. Most mutations are inconsequential. Some are deleterious, and a few give the recipient a leg up on survival. So 99.999999% of the DNA is the exact same DNA as parents. That's a miracle. If you want to talk about miracles, what's the chance of anything doing that? I work with industries. We never achieve that reproducibility. But 0.000001% difference drives God's bar creation through Lamana, and that's the word that's used 11 times in Genesis 1, after her kind. I call that evolution. This small difference is what God has used to bar create Adam humanity in the Tselem image of God. So to characterize genetic similarities and differences, people talk about haplogroups. So the female mitochondrial DNA haplogroups are identified by the letters L through R, and the male ones are by A through S. That's just names that they've come up with that are convenient. And here we're going to focus on the male CT, DE, and CF, and the female L3, M, and N. Those are just names that people use. Admixing means mating within a species, or in this case, Homo sapiens species. Introgression means mating between two distinct species, for example, buffalo with cows, or Homo sapiens with Neanderthals. The effective population size, NE, is the size of the idealized population that would lose genetic diversity or become inbred or drift or coalesce at the same rate as the actual population. For mammals, the census population is generally 2 to 10 times the effective population. For fish, it could be 1,000 to 100,000 times the effective population because they release a lot of cells. Eggs, sperm. For fish, the census for humans, our effective population is 15,000 to 30,000, but our census population is 7.7 billion. So that means we act both like mammals and fish, if you please. And we have a very narrow genetic makeup that makes us all one blood. This huge ratio shows how tightly Adam humanity is of one blood. So how do you preserve a species so it will be perifruitful, rabba multiply, and molly fill the earth? That was God's first commandment. population genetics management of vulnerable species would say that a good practice is to achieve cross-migration and admixture amongst a robust genetic pool with perhaps intergression with closely aligned species. By the way, that works better than inbreeding between two siblings. So herein, we trace how God has practiced good population genetics while managing Adam humanity so as to bio-create Adam humanity in the Tselem image of God. By the Endangered Species Act, vulnerable means fewer than 10,000 individuals and declining with declining habitat. The Homo sapiens got very close to being vulnerable, but God had other plans and purpose. Okay, so here's the distribution of male chromosomes, and this is by Posnick. And what this shows is the distribution of these haplogroups. And by the way, the haplogroups, one might vary by another, by phenotype, by such things, what's your hair composition, what's the shape of your teeth, something like that. So every time you see a branch like this, that's a divergence time. And so about 76,000 years ago, there was this divergence. About 60,000 years ago, these divergences. And then there are some haplogroups that are within Africa and always have been. Posnick thinks that this split actually occurred across the Red Sea from Africa, and then E came back into Africa later, and then all of Europe and Asia, the haplogroups split out into there. So the widths of these characterize the proportional frequency of these, and notice how wide this is, and that's E1B of the Bantu people. And then I put together this from data on the web. People have said they've been able to reconstruct the Neanderthal reference sequence and then reconstruct a Sapiens reference sequence and look at how they diverted. And then you come down to L3, and that's what we're wanting to focus on, and that was about 70,000 to 75,000 years ago. And the commentary is, out of 16,569 base pairs on mitochondrial DNA, there's only 33 mutations going from this reconstructed sapien reference to here. That's a very small number, if you please. And then going from L3 to M and M, there were 4 and 5 more mutations, so hardly anything. And that occurred about 50,000 to 65,000 years ago, and that probably also happened in East Africa. And then how about the full genome? And so using some complicated math, you can look at what was the likely effective population at various times. And what we see is a while ago in Africa, there was more of an effective population than there was at this bottleneck. So in genetics, we talk about bottlenecks, and this first one occurred about 110,000 years ago to 70,000 years ago, and this was a drought bottleneck, where by this time, Africa, a lot of it, was pretty close to archaeological desert. Okay, then we have a founder group that crosses the Red Sea, is what some people think now, and that's a hypothesis. And then that got down to an effective population of about 200,000, maybe 400,000. And that bottleneck went all the way up until about 30,000 years ago. Okay, and then let's look back at the climate and notice how there's this drop here that compares to this drop here. And this is very much related to climate. By the way, if you plot a Neanderthal, it'd probably go something about like this, and then it goes to zero right here. So the bottleneck ended in nothing, if you please. So then let's look at what Africa's like. So we take the male CT, the female L3, cross the Red Sea into this very fertile area because of the low ocean water. And then you have this split going M and N this way, L3 splitting into others going this way, E coming back in and starting the Bantu there. And then this is what the overall thing could look like. So here's the bottleneck of the African drought. Before that time, there's a lot of different genetic variability. And then there's this founder event going into Eurasia, and then the development of more genetics along these lines within Africa, cross migrations back and forth across Africa. And then by about 35,000 years ago, there was just a lot of migration going every which way. And this is what I call the one blood of Adam humans that's being talked about in Genesis 1 and Acts 17, 26. God made of one blood all humanity, admixed Adam Homo sapiens from a robust but tight gene pool. Okay, and then this is what this looks like. Here's South Africa, the Eastern African highlands crossing the Red Sea, and then Cro-Magnon going this way and having the Europeans, the Asians going across Beringia when it was dry, going on to Australia when you had to go 400 miles across the open sea there. And this is what the family tree of primates look like. Here's Homo compared to chimpanzee and so on. But the commentary is compare this row of data to this. So 7.7 billion humans presently, effective population 15,000 to 30,000. And compare that, for example, to Western gorilla, 150,000 Western gorilla compared to the same effective population closely, 15. This is showing how tight our blood is and how much we all are alike. So an overview, God made of one blood, one species, all humans by mixing Adam Homo sapiens from the robust but tight genetic pool. Genesis 1 is about Adam humanity. Genesis 2 is about Adam and Eve. God has a purpose for humans and ethnic groups. Genetics teaches us how close we are genetically to one another, truly one blood. Whatever our ethnos, we must respect all humans as one blood under God. There's no room for prejudice because we literally, genetically, are brothers and sisters of each other. God's bar of creation involves genetics, and God looks at the long view.
Thank you, Fred. We have a few minutes for some questions.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, I tend to be more of a literalist in the Bible.
Literalist?
Yes.
Me too.
Good. And when I read about God creating human, Adam and Eve, and breathing his spirit in them, in fact, we were talking a little bit last night with Miller about this, but what happened then? What made us different then? In your view and in your scheme? So that's my big question. Like, leaving aside, whether we evolved or God created us, as a discrete event, but what happened in your understanding? And thanks.
Yeah, so God breathed into us the neshama of, and Jews would say soul, actually, there. We would say something like life. There's also the word nefesh, which can be translated as soul or self-consciousness. Animals have nefesh. We're the only ones with neshama. So my perspective is, yes, God breathed that into Adam and Eve. Did he breathe it into others that were contemporary with him? Probably. Did he breathe it into others that were preceded him? Probably. How far back? We don't know.
And how?
How?
As far as you might suppose.
Open your mouth.
I don't know.
So, Fred, what do we know about the genealogy of the X and the Y chromosome?
Genealogy of what?
The X and Y chromosome.
X and Y?
Thinking about the fact that we're male and female.
Oh, yeah. So this is the construction. So mitochondrial DNA is passed on to females and males,
yeah. But
then the male mitochondrial DNA probably doesn't go to the next males or females. So this is what's changed in it. Sorry.
Sorry.
So this is a C going to a T. That's an A going to a G, for example. So at the, you know, base pair level, that's what's going on the mitochondrial DNA. For the male chromosome, they're looking at similar kind of splits. The male chromosome is a little bit longer, but they're looking for those same kind of splits and then giving designations of different haplogroups to them. So the X is a lot bigger, and then there's all these other chromosomes that have both, and that's what we call the autosomal. So.
Also, I think the X chromosome recombined.
Yeah, the X chromosome can recombine.
So you don't have crossing over with the X chromosome.
When you're a female, you have an X from both parents come together. When you're a male, you have an X come from your mom, and the Y come from your dad.
So I just want to ask a technical question. I thought I understood effective population size. Some animals can have a greater effective population size than their census, some lower depending on the breeding system. But one way or the other, I would have thought that our effective, as a species, population breeding size would, effective population, would have been not so low. I would have thought it would be like 5 or 6 billion rather than, what were the numbers you quoted?
15,000 to 30,000.
So does that imply that the vast majority of humans on the planet are not engaging in repopulating?
They probably work for the federal government.
Okay, I'll have to remove the effective population and see if I can do that.
That's a biological term. We can talk about that.
Well, we should probably transition to the next speaker. Let's say thank you.